welcome to TDF Talks, a podcast from The Design Files, Australia's most popular design blog. We are an enhanced podcast, which means if you listen to TDF Talks using the Overcast or Pocket Casts apps, you will see images and links in your player while you listen. I'm your host, Lucy Fagans, and I'm the founder and editor of The Design Files. Every 2 weeks, this podcast features an inspiring chat with a noteworthy Australian creative, from designers, makers and artists, to successful creative entrepreneurs, to architects, gallerists and more. Episode, we chat to an incredibly inspiring Melbourne designer and businesswoman who we've followed and featured on The Design Files many times over the past 10 years. Lucy Folk launched her label as a small jewellery line in 2007, but over the years the brand has developed into a fashion and accessories brand which now has a global following. From jewellery to apparel, sunglasses, bags and hand-woven baskets, Lucy Folk's distinct aesthetic has won her a cult following both at home and abroad. Lucy originally studied gold and silversmithing at RMIT in Melbourne, without a clear plan for world domination at the time. Instead, as she mentions in our interview, the brand has grown organically, and Lucy has been very careful to ensure every business decision reflects her own values. Now with a team of 25 staff, 3 Australian stores and 44 stockists globally, including this month a new exciting relationship with Anita Porter, it's safe to say the slow and steady approach is really paying off for Lucy. I was super excited to sit down with Lucy recently at her Melbourne headquarters in Windsor to chat about the incredible growth of her brand, her new life in Paris, and how Beyoncé ended up wearing her earrings. Hello and welcome to TDF Talks. Today I'm in Windsor in the Melbourne headquarters of Lucy Folk, chatting, of course, to the brand's founder and creative director, Lucy Folk. Lucy launched her label primarily as a jewellery line in 2007, but over the years the brand has developed into a fully fledged fashion and accessories brand which now has a global following. Her pieces have been worn by international stars and trend leaders, including Leandra Medine of Man Repeller, UK model Suki Waterhouse, and yes, even Beyoncé. We are so thrilled to speak to the woman behind the brand. Lucy, thank you so much for being on our podcast.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You launched Lucy Folk in 2007 and you were only 25 at the time, which is really young to start a brand. Did you always want to be a jewellery designer?
Definitely not. I always wanted to be an artist, but I studied while I was at school. I did classes every week and learned the basics of jewellery design and just adored it, and then went straight to RMIT from school and, yeah, just felt really natural and was a really exciting path to take and pursue. So it's been great.
And so, like, I remember when you first started your ranges, you know, you had, it was pretty modest. It felt like a one-woman operation, which I guess it was in the early days. Did you ever imagine Lucy Folk would be at the scale it is now as a business?
Not really. I mean, I always have like high expectations, and I think that aim for, you know, to try and get the best result I can, put everything into it. So it really is, yeah, super exciting to see where we are today.
Yeah. I just remember your early, you know, really food-inspired work and your pretzel necklaces and all that iconic stuff, which is like collector's item now probably. But yeah, it's... I kind of wonder, did you have big dreams for the brand? Did you think back then, I want to be in Colette or certain retailers or things like that at that early stage? Or were you a bit more fluid at the early stage?
From the beginning, I felt like I wanted to have my work in an international sort of environment. I remember like being in Paris as a younger girl and going to Colette and speaking to the people behind the counter and saying, I've got this brand and, you know, are you interested? And they were just like, oh, my God, you don't know how many people come in here each day asking that question. But I think you're quite naive at that point and you think it's really easy and you don't understand what the industry is like. But, yeah, I mean, I was really excited to be able to sell my work in places that I like to shop in. And I've been an avid shopper from a young age. So, yeah, I think the international aspect is, like, very important to me.
Yeah. Well, you opened your first retail store in Melbourne, your tiny little gorgeous flagship in Crosley Street back in 2011. It must have been a big move at the time, opening a bricks and mortar store. Your business probably, was it still pretty small in terms of staffing at that point?
Very. I think we had like three of us at that point, and I used to work in the store when we opened. And I did the fit out with an architect called Charlie Ingalls, and we did it all together, and it was a real sort of like hands-on operation. Plus, it was actually by chance that I got that space. So I knew the landlord, and I said to him, if anything comes up, like if this shop becomes available, let me know. And then he called me like 2 months later and said, it's available. Are you interested? And I was like, oh, God, this is a big step. But I've always been sort of taught like to just take risks and go for it. So I thought, may as well. And what's the worst that can happen if it, you know, it doesn't work out? At least I tried. And it has. So, I mean, I can't really believe that it's still there now. It's been great. I love Crosley Street.
Yeah, it's such a perfect little shop. It feels like the perfect kind of starting point, I guess, for a brand like yours. What does your business look like today? How many staff have you got and how many stores and stockists?
So we've got 25 staff. We have 3 stores and we have 44 stockists worldwide. And then we have 2 offices, so one in Sydney, one in Melbourne, and then I work alone in Paris.
Right. Yeah, I'm going to get to the Paris connection in a minute. And so with your 25 staff, what kind of breakdown do we have? So you must have a few store staff, like retail staff,
yeah.
And then in your team, in your head office, you've got makers on site, right?
So we've got 3 makers. So Craig, who's the master jeweler, who I've worked with for around 9 years. We also studied together and he's been there since the beginning. And then he's got 2 assistants, and then we've got sales in-house, PR in-house, general manager, logistics, finance, you know, it's all kind of happening. So it's been, the growth in the past 18 months has been quite extreme. So obviously there's been a lot of growing pains. And also since we've moved offices, so now we're in Windsor, we used to be in the city, it's become a lot more efficient and everyone has space to like properly, you know, do their job. And
yeah.
And we have warehousing and all that stuff. So, yeah, it's a much bigger beast now, but it's exciting. And everyone, I feel like, is excited about the growth and being part of family. And it's very much like feels like a family, which is nice.
Yeah, it's super nice. And I'm sure many smaller businesses would love to understand a little bit more about that growth. So, you know, from a solo operation to a really established label, did you have a master plan or has there been a turning point at any moment where you've gone, okay, let's ramp this up?
Not really. I feel like it's always been very organic, and we didn't open another store. You know, it was like 5 years from between Crosley and Player. So that was quite a long time. And I mean, I think the way that the brand is now, like Player probably was like the turning point. That was when we started to get a lot more attention. I think being based, having a store in Sydney and being closer to the media meant that like people took notice.
Yeah.
Media wise. Like I think when you're from Melbourne, it's quite hard to get that traction, and it's sort of like you could be on a different planet, you know?
Which is so crazy.
It's
not
crazy.
That hard, guys.
Yeah. So that was great. And also it was a real, you know, like it was a different sort of concept for me to like bring in different clothing and then expand into other product categories like the sunglasses we'd been doing prior to Player opening. But then we, you know, have been doing a lot more sort of like exclusive content for the stores made out of Morocco. And it's been cool. It's definitely pushed me creatively. And that's what I think I needed too, just to like reinvigorate.
Yeah.
Because there's only sort of so much, you know, initially food jewelry that you can create.
Yeah.
And so then the brand really changed. And I was much more focused on like how I was feeling and travel and like what was inspiring me, like art wise and things. And that's really what sort of influences the brand now. It's not so much about food.
Yeah. It's interesting those risks you take, like, you know, taking that lease in Bondi must have been a big leap.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, taking that has been then the push to then develop new product and to do new things. So it's funny how every risk you take kind of does push you to be better, I guess, in a way.
Definitely. And I think also, like, we were looking at a shop in the Strand in Sydney and then that fell through, and all these things that happened that, you know, kind of were supposed to feel fabulous and then didn't work out. Then led me to open a store in Bondi. And I was living in Bondi and I knew that like as a resident there, you don't really leave. So like to have a store down there and be able to walk to your store and kind of create this culture around the brand was really sort of organic because, yeah, it was how I wanted to shop. And that's sort of always part of it.
Yeah.
It's like, how do I want to shop and what do I want my experience to be, and how can we like sort of engage with our customer in a different way that is a lot more like intimate and playful and, you know, and
yeah.
These spaces are always like either sort of like so small that you sort of feel a little bit uncomfortable that then you have to engage with the, you know, the girl working in the store and
yeah.
you understand more about the brand because you have to ask questions or,
yeah.
And then in player it's like the decor is so, you know, fun so people really want to kind of ask questions and be around, you know, the staff and they get offered drinks and it's all about like this experience, which I think is really nice because retail's changed so much and the way people shop is really different and I don't shop online.
Yeah, really? That's no. Interesting.
Yeah.
This anecdote, I remember I saw you maybe 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago at the races of all places. And I remember we were chatting to this other really great retailer who happened to be there and she's really successful. And I remember distinctly how she was encouraging you, while we probably all had a champagne or two, to open a store or more stores in shopping centres. And you just were like, I just so distinctly remember your answer when you said, but I don't really shop in shopping centres. And, you know, it was no judgment, but it was like, but it doesn't make sense for me because that's not where I shop and that's not, you know, culturally the right fit.
Yeah.
And I just remember thinking, wow, you definitely, it was clear to me then that you have a very authentic approach to your brand and I'm sure you probably could be 10 times the size, but you choose to do it your way.
Yeah.
What, is that a fair kind of assessment?
100%. Yeah. No, I definitely, yeah. There's like, you could roll out 40 stores and I'm like, I'm not interested. I want to create like beautiful environments and this it has to be intimate and jewelry is like, you know, you need to touch it, you need to try it on, you need to feel the materials. And I think also the fact that we've just opened here, you know, this was completely organic. We had a trunk show. It went so well. We realized the space like warranted like, you know, such good use out of it. And,
yeah.
And then now we've got a store here and that wasn't intended. So
yeah,
it's just, it's kind of nice like that.
Yeah. It's evolved. Totally.
Yeah.
Have you had any mentors or advisors along the way who've really helped, I guess, with the business side?
Definitely. Yeah, 100%. I mean, I'm very close with my family and my dad in particular. Like, he helps me a lot. He's built, like, some amazing businesses. And, yeah, I definitely have his support and we talk about business a lot. And
yeah.
His team are also very helpful. And then I have other friends in the industry that I catch up with and we talk about the highs and lows of business. And
yeah.
And it's very important. I think you need to feel supported. And I don't know, like I don't have a business background. I'm purely creative. So I've learned a lot along the way and I'm not going to pretend that like my role in the business is, you know, I'm the creative director. I'm obviously across everything, but yeah, we need support there for sure.
Yeah. And I know in my business, like when you reach a certain size and I've only got like 7 staff, it's easy to find yourself constantly drawn away from the creative side and to just be completely overwhelmed with the business side. And really that could be your full-time job if
yeah.
you chose for it to be. So how do you feel about that? How do you manage to stay creatively focused and not be, I guess, too unbalanced when it comes to business versus creative?
I think I have to be out of the office a lot when I'm designing. I can't design in the office, yes, because you get sort of pulled in every direction. So that was part of the reason why I moved to Paris. And also I find I'm always the most creative when I have space around me and time. So always on holidays or, you know, when you're at the beach on the weekend or you just have that sort of time to kind of absorb and look through books and reflect and just feel inspired. But yeah, I think I feel quite overwhelmed often otherwise, like, you know, when you're in the office and you've got everyone asking you questions and especially now that I don't live here, it's my time in the office is purely dedicated to like working with the team.
Yeah.
And then I can focus on design when I'm away.
Yeah. So I have to ask about Paris. So you're living in Paris now.
Yeah.
How did the move to Europe come about? Like why and when did you make that move?
So 12 months ago, I was spending roughly 4 to 5 months overseas and the back and forth was just really sort of taking its toll on my health and I felt like I was never in one place for more than a few weeks and it's quite hard to feel grounded and
yeah.
That just, yeah, got to me. So my dad's European. I have a European passport. We sell in Paris twice a year. We were selling 3 times a year. And then I was always going back and forth and we had this new atelier that we were working with in Marrakesh. So it made more sense for me to be based in Europe for 6 to 7 months of the year and be in Europe and then be in Australia for 4 months.
Yeah.
And be in Australia.
Yeah.
So you can really focus. Because, yeah. I mean, you know what it's like, those flights.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's hard.
It totally makes sense. And then how does that work with running a business across continents? Like how are you finding the challenge of, I guess, keeping your team motivated and feeling connected to the Melbourne team when you're not around?
It's complicated. I think everyone has been really great at communicating. We have like a few hours in the morning where we like are in sync. So I wake up at sort of 7 or 8 and then I have a couple of hours with the team. I find I'm actually much more efficient because I have the time to sit down and get back to everyone, and I know that I have to in that sort of shorter period of time.
Yeah.
And we just, you know, talk on the phone, and these days you can Skype and you can do lots of different things. I think like most of the team came to Europe last year.
Oh, yeah.
So they all got to experience what I was experiencing and then understand like what I was seeing and how that was helping the business. And I think then also when we brought everything back to the salon and opened the store and they saw the apparel and what I was buying and the whole story came together, I think it made much more sense. And now the team is a lot more excited about, you know, being involved in seeing how customers respond. And
yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely complicated for sure. And I'll just jump on a plane if I have to. So it's not that hard to.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about your recent-ish extension into fashion and resort wear. Like, you know, our team at Design Plus are huge fans of your work. And when you first launched clothing, it was literally such big news in the office. We were just like, wow, clothes from Lucy. Like, how is this even possible?
Well, in that case.
No, yeah, I was like, how do you do this? Like, I was just thinking, oh, my God, sizing and production and pattern making. Like, how have you found that learning curve moving into fashion or apparel?
It's been a huge undertaking. I think I thought it would be a lot less complicated, but also I just felt there was such a gap in the market in resort wear and things that, you know, were casual and beautiful and weren't sort of heavily embellished and a bit sort of overdone or gaudy, you know, as far as like caftans and beachwear went. So I am working with this amazing atelier in Marrakesh, and it's really complicated because it's artisanal.
Yeah.
So there's lots of imperfections and things that like are part of the process that are harder from like a QC point of view and, you know, when you're putting it in store and communicating that to the customer. But I have a great team, and now we have someone helping me on like with the apparel. So she works 3 days a week and we draw everything here. We get all the patterns made here and then we send it to Marrakesh, and then I go to Marrakesh and I spend as much time as needed working directly with them in the factory every day.
So you just go on your own to Marrakesh and just work it all out?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So this year I did the buying in Paris for the shop, and we actually didn't sell the collection, but we did the buying. And then I went straight to Marrakesh and worked there for like 10 days and then came back and went back. It's intensive, but I'm lucky I've got really good friends in Marrakesh, so I can stay with them, and it's like, yeah.
Yeah.
It's nice. There's a good community there, and everyone's really super like eccentric and fabulous and entrepreneurial. So I'm actually learning a lot from that environment too.
Yeah. That's important. As a creative, it's important too, yeah, to just remain inspired and to be, you know, I guess, absorbing new things all the time and not in a bubble.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to ask you was, over the years, you've been so strong with developing a really distinct brand DNA. And so from your branding to your store interiors, which are always so perfect and so kind of ahead of their time. And then obviously all your campaign imagery, the girls in the office were saying to me, she was the first one to do fashion films, you know, especially in Melbourne in this way, and the gorgeous little films that you make. Where does that come from? Like, why has branding and art direction been such a key focus for you, and who are your key collaborators on things like that?
Well, I work closely with my friend Sophie Edelstein, who's a really amazing director, and we came up with lots of the concepts for the films, which were totally like crazy and sort of out of the box. And I think for me, it was just having that sort of message, that really strong message about like my brand that I wanted to communicate, so that it was like playful and fun and had humor, and it wasn't all like fashion and serious and romantic and just beautiful and airy. And, you know, it was, yeah, more about like this sort of strong, like, you know, how do we have fun with what we do? And like, how do we sort of take away from all of the seriousness in the world out there? And so I worked with like lots of amazing photographers, and I don't know, I think probably because I grew up with quite a sort of strong art appreciation, and you know, my sister was a photographer, and you look at all these brands out there and what they're doing, and they're always pushing the boundaries, and I just wanted to sort of take risks and do things that no one else was doing, and that's how your brand is seen. So it's, for me, it's really important. And it's also like my training as a silversmith at RMIT, you know, they teach you about like this story, you're a storyteller, and the concept is really important. And I think that has been so like ingrained in me. And, you know, these themes, like people don't care what the collection's called, but for me that's like everything, you know. It's like, how do you sort of define what you're going to do for 6 months, and how do you create context around that? So, yeah, I mean, I'm working with Sophie. I work with Gemma, who's been working in the office for 2 years now, and she's great. And then Bridget Clark is a photographer. She works and does all our social media content. Gabrielle Penfold, who's worked at Player and now helps with art directing the shoots for social media. And Tamsin Johnson does the interiors with me. They're all like these great girls that, you know, have such amazing talents, and it's really nice to nurture each other and support each other and enable them to push themselves as well. Because I think, you know, when you're working for like a corporate brand, there's such strict parameters of like how you need to, like how you need to be seen.
Yeah.
And we can kind of be seen the way we want to be seen. So it's nice to just go for it.
Yeah.
And sometimes like what we've done when I look back, it's like kind of absurd and hilarious. And I just, you know, think, oh, wow, like, you know, we were pretty nuts back then. But one of the, like, my most favorite things was the film we shot in Venice. Like, that was such a highlight and so special to be able to be there for the Biennale and meet all these amazing people that have now become really close friends. And, you know, you develop this community around the brand. And also, like, when you're working with different teams internationally, then they start to know the brand and appreciate it. So you're sort of, like, growing this audience through, like, collaborating.
Yeah.
And I think you just, I've pushed it because you approach these people, like these amazing photographers, and they're all up for doing something different.
Yeah.
And they're excited for you to be able to like sort of step back a bit and then, you know, tell you what they think too. And I think that's what I really love about working with a team, is that everyone is really good at what they do. Like, I can make the jewelry, I can I don't make it anymore, but I can design it. I can art direct, I can do many different things, but you know, I can't take photos, and I don't pretend that I can do all those things. So I really let everyone take their lead when they're working with me.
Yeah.
And I think that's what people love the most.
You've done a lot of amazing collaborations, but I'm sure there's plenty more to come. What is your like dream collaboration, or just your dream project? Like, I asked Becky Orpen this question, and she said, I want to do a hotel, which is probably like a dream for many designers to do something like that.
I've got something in mind, but I can't tell you because it could be really fabulous, and I don't want anyone to steal my idea. I don't know. I'd love to work with like a big fashion designer and do something creative together, or a really well-known artist. I mean, I loved working with Luke Edward Hall. I think it's quite beautiful working with an artist. It's very different to working with a brand.
And do you, when you approach a collaboration, is it very organic? I'm getting the sense it probably is, like, you're not thinking we need to do 3 collaborations this year or something. It's just like when it feels right, when you meet someone that, you know, you connect with, and that's when it happens.
Definitely.
Yeah. What is something you haven't done yet, whether it be professional or personal, that you would love to do?
I'd like to take drawing classes. I'd like to be fluent in French. I would like to open a store overseas. There's many things.
Now it's time for 10 quick questions with Lucy.
What time do you set your alarm?
8 o'clock in Paris, 7 o'clock in Australia.
Okay, good. What do you eat for breakfast?
A smoothie.
Do you choose your outfit the night before or at the last minute?
At the last minute.
Are you team gold or team silver?
Gold.
What is the most visited website on your computer this week?
AccuWeather.
Don't even know that one. You must be shooting, right, if you're checking the weather?
No, I just love to know what's happening in different places, and I was sort of keen to maybe escape for the weekend to the sun.
What was the last thing you bought online?
A book by Michele Barcello, a ceramicist.
What's your current favorite Lucy Falk go-to item?
The Gods of the Sea necklace from the Celestia collection.
It is definitely on my wish list too. What is your favorite neighborhood in Melbourne?
At the moment, it's St. Kilda.
It's 9 p.m. on a weeknight. What are you doing?
Probably still eating dinner.
That's very European of you. And finally, when is your bedtime?
Between 10:30 and 12:30.
And finally, just one last question. We've got to ask, how did you get Beyoncé wearing a pair of your earrings?
Through her stylist, who was a friend of a friend.
That was a great get. And she looked amazing in them.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for chatting to us, Lucy.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
For more info on Lucy Falk and her exquisite jewellery collections, you'll find a link to her website in our show notes. You might also like to suss Lucy's Windsor headquarters and showroom, designed by interior designer Tamsin Johnson. It is the most ridiculously beautiful space and well worth revisiting. We also featured Lucy's gorgeous Bondi store, Player, a little while ago. You can revisit that post too via our show notes, or if listening to our enhanced podcast, you'll be seeing some photos right now. And of course, we also recommend following Lucy on Instagram. Her business account is Lucy, L-U-C-Y underscore Folk, F-O-L-K, to stalk her travels across the globe and, of course, keep up to date with all her latest creations and collaborations. You've been listening to TDF Talks, a fortnightly podcast from The Design Files. I'm your host, Lucy Fagans. We are an enhanced podcast. Please download the Overcast app in order to see relevant images and links in your player while you listen. Alternatively, all links can be found in our show notes at thedesignfiles.net/podcast. Of course, you can also visit our main website, thedesignfiles.net, where we post new content 3 times a day, featuring the best and brightest in Australian design, art, architecture, and more. Or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at The Design Files. You can also email us at podcast@thedesignfiles.net. Thank you so much for tuning in, and if you like what you've heard, please subscribe to TDF Talks on iTunes. Thanks for listening.